And the goal there was to try to understand whether giving might not just lead to happiness when people have extra disposable income that they can choose to use as they like, but whether giving might also lead to happiness even when people's financial resources are scarce, because that might be a particularly tough test of this question. It seemed plausible to my colleagues and I that when people have very limited financial resources, you might get fewer emotional rewards from giving it away. Or you could even imagine the reverse, where you might actually feel pain from spending money on others or less satisfaction. So we tested this question. We collaborated with folks in India and Uganda and South Africa to recruit participants from lower income countries to try to explore whether giving leads to higher levels of happiness in these very different social, cultural, and financially relevant situations. And long story short is that in both relatively rich and relatively poor nations, when people were randomly assigned to either recall a time or spend money on others, they were happier.
Hey there, friends. Welcome once more to the Happy Habit Podcast. I'm Matthew. I'm here every Monday and Thursday talking all things health and well-being and motivation and plenty of other different topics with experts from a whole host of different backgrounds, everything from philosophy to neuroscience to psychology to biology and lots more besides. If you're getting value from listening in to one of the 360 plus episodes that I have amassed at this point over the last 3.5, almost 4 years. Well, please like, subscribe, share. Yes, get the word out. Please tell friends and family and work colleagues alike that you're enjoying the podcast. And if you've already done so, thank you so much indeed. And don't forget to leave us a positive review because that helps spread the message even further. Now, today I'm talking to Professor Lara Acknin. She is the director of the Helping and Happiness Lab at Simon Fraser University. She studies what makes people live happier and healthier lives. What a fascinating area of research. And so given the fact that this podcast is all about striving to acquire a greater state of happiness and contentment through fulfilling routines, self-improvement and health and well-being, I thought it would be more than interesting to hear the thoughts of Professor Acknin. And so in this episode, we ask about the effect generosity has on our levels of happiness. We speculate whether people who work in service of others, like nurses, for example, we ask if they are more predisposed to being happy by virtue of serving or giving of their time and energies to others. We also pose the question, does being generous make you happier, or are happier people just more generous? Professor Acknin tells us about her goodie bag paradigm. We explore generosity across cultures and socioeconomic sectors. We hear about the generosity of children and what conclusions can be drawn. Expect to hear the purpose underlying our desire to give to others in the first place. Plus, expect to hear the distinction between giver and receiver-centric gifts, something which I think will give people pause for thought, especially before they buy their next gift for a friend or a family member. Well, Professor Lara Acknin, you spend your time studying what helps make people happy and helps them live healthier and happier lives. And giving and volunteering seem to make people happy. How so?
Well, that's a great question because I don't think we perfectly understand the mechanism yet. So we're not exactly sure why giving of oneself leads to these higher levels of happiness. We just seem to see it consistently and robustly in the literature.
Tell me about your master's thesis, because this was particularly interesting. You recruited lots of undergrad students and you studied their spending choices. Can you tell me how that went?
Sure. So yeah, years ago now, when I was a graduate student, I was interested in knowing whether people's spending choices could impact their well-being. And so we conducted a series of studies, but I think perhaps the most interesting one is where I went out on the morning hours of campus and recruited a bunch of undergraduate students to take part in a study on everyday spending choices. And if they agreed, they were randomly assigned to one of four conditions in our study. And so what I did was I went into a bag and I pulled out an envelope. Some of the envelopes had $5, some of them had $20. And inside was a little slip of paper that gave some spending instructions. So half of the students were randomly assigned to a condition that we called personal spending, where we asked the folks to spend the money that they had received on themselves by way of covering a bill or an expense or buying a gift for themselves. And the other half were randomly assigned to this condition where they were asked to engage in what we call pro-social spending, or spending the money on others. So this could be a gift for someone else or a charitable donation. So I recruited these people in the morning at around 10 a.m. and 10 o'clock local time, and then they had the whole day to go about spending this money. And then we called them back in the evening around between 6 to 8 o'clock and asked them a series of questions. And critical in that phone call was how happy they were feeling at the end of the day. And these questions were posed by a research assistant who didn't know how much money they had received and how they were asked to spend it. And what we found was that people who were randomly assigned to spend their money generously, to spend the windfall generously, reported significantly higher levels of happiness at the end of the day. And so it wasn't about how much money they had received, but it was about how they had been asked to spend it. And this experimental design we thought was really critical because previous research has found on multiple occasions that people who are more generous with their money tend to report higher levels of happiness. And that's nice to see, but it raises some interesting questions about interpretation. Is it that sharing one's money makes you happier? Is it that happier people are more likely to be generous? Or is it that some unmeasured third variable is really responsible for this association? And to really drill down on the direction of causality or what is causing what, we need these experiments. And so it was really helpful to go out to tell people, to provide this windfall of $5 or $20 and tell them to spend it in a particular way. And this allowed us to look at happiness differences at the end of the day. And as I said, generous spending led to higher levels of happiness. And so it provides a bit of causal evidence that spending generously does indeed make people happier.
You used the term pro-social there. Could you just define exactly what that means?
Sure. Yeah. So my colleagues and I have defined what we call generous spending as pro-social spending, which is using money on others. It can take various different forms, and we can talk about that afterward if you like, but it's using money to benefit others as opposed to oneself. So that could be, for instance, donating money to charity. It could be treating a friend to dinner or coffee. It could be, you know, buying your sibling or a child a toy. But it's really about spending money on others as opposed to oneself.
And you have looked at this act of generosity in terms of different cohorts. I know you've looked at children and you've looked at ex-offenders. And also an interesting one, and an African cohort whereby they elected to give friends or relatives or colleagues airtime for their cell phone or mobile phone operator. Could you tell me about these different cohorts?
Sure. So thank you, really done your homework. You did. So yes, we've been trying to understand. So our initial work on this topic, trying to understand whether engaging in generous acts makes people happy, was conducted in North America, and especially with undergraduate students, which always seemed to me like a very reasonable place to begin, but undergraduate students don't necessarily represent the whole of humanity and might present a very limited snapshot. And so over the course of my PhD and stints, I've been really interested in trying to understand how broad this phenomenon might be, really trying to understand whether it might be a core feature of humanity, not just something we see in particularly privileged or, you know, tiny samples. And so I've worked with various collaborators around the world with various areas of expertise to try to push the boundaries of understanding how far this relationship might go. So part of that is looking early in ontogeny or development, looking at young children under the age of 2. Other questions have been looking at whether this might be a robust and replicable finding in other parts of the world, like you mentioned in Africa. And the goal there was to try to understand whether giving might not just lead to happiness when people have extra disposable income that they can choose to use as they like, but whether giving might also lead to happiness even when people's financial resources are scarce, because that might be a particularly tough test of this question. It seemed plausible to my colleagues and I that when people have very limited financial resources, you might get fewer emotional rewards from giving it away. Or you could even imagine the reverse, where you might actually feel pain from spending money on others or less satisfaction. So we tested this question. We thought it was an empirical one. We collaborated with folks in India and Uganda and South Africa to recruit lower income countries to try to explore whether giving leads to higher levels of happiness in these very different social, cultural, and financially relevant situations. And long story short is that in both relatively rich and relatively poor nations, when people were randomly assigned to either recall a time or spend money, like to actually go out and spend money on others, they were happier than when they were asked to recall or actually spend money on themselves. So my colleagues and I have used this to argue that the emotional rewards of generosity might not be limited to, you know, to wealthy samples, but might be detectable in different places, different regions around the
world. And speaking of different regions, you saw cultural differences when you went to Vanuatu. I believe you got funding to head to Vanuatu to perform a study there. And then in relation then to that, you mentioned before in a previous interview about your goodie bag paradigm. Could you explain, first of all, what the goodie bag paradigm is and then put it into context in terms of the studies that you performed at Vanuatu?
Certainly. So the goodie bag paradigm is one that my colleagues and I came up with to study generous spending in the lab. So simply put, and to also address all these methodological confounds or confusions that could come up when we're studying generous behavior. So simply put, what we often do is we recruit participants. They usually come into the lab and they're given a paper packet questionnaire. And the questionnaire begins by asking people to report their baseline levels of happiness. And then in the paper questionnaire, they're told, in addition to whatever the payment fee, the show-up fee that they've earned for coming into the lab, they've also earned an additional small sum of money that they can use to purchase a goodie bag that is filled with treats of their choice. And they're told that they have a couple different selections they could make. In most of our studies, we offer either two chocolate candy bars, two boxes of juice, or a mixture of juice and chocolate. Or there's always a fourth option where people can say, no thanks, I don't want to buy any of these items. I'm going to choose to cash out and take the financial value for myself. Now, critically, in these experiments, people are randomly assigned to either buy the goodie bag for themselves in the personal spending condition or to buy it for another person in what we call our pro-social spending condition. Across the board, almost everybody chooses to buy the goodie bag because we make it a really good deal. People get to see the goodie bag packaged right in front of them, so they know it's real, it's not imaginary, we're not tricking them. And then they see the goodie bag put off to the side, they go back to their seats, and they fill out the remainder of their questionnaire package, which is really asking them how are they feeling in that moment. And the bells, there's a whole bunch of bells and whistles into the preparation of these questionnaire packets, but it's really, the study's designed to remove all these alternative reasons that giving might feel good. So we try to make sure that nobody other than the person themselves knows that they've done a kind deed. And so it's not just about, you know, the metaphorical pat on the back you might get when someone thinks you've done a nice deed. It's not about praise from other people. And we also, in this paradigm, don't even allow the givers who are giving a kind deed, the goodie bag to someone in need, to even deliver the act, the goodie bag themselves. Our lab is delivering the goodie bag on their behalf. Yet lo and behold, time and time again, when we run these experiments, we find that people are happier after buying these goodie bags for charity than they are after buying the exact same items for themselves. And so we've kind of argued that even in this controlled context, when we remove all the various ways in which generous spending might be particularly influential in everyday life, where people get to pick from a wide variety of gifts that they want to give and give in person in meaningful ways where they have an audience and they get this immediate smile and feedback from the recipient, even in this very constrained situation in the lab, we see these emotional rewards of giving, which we've argued is what we think to be a pretty tough test of the question. And so the goodie bag paradigm was originally derived in Canada and tested in South Africa and Canada. But when I went to Vanuatu, we made some accommodations to run it there. We had a much smaller sample because the villages we were running these studies in had a maximum of around 150 people. And we had to make some accommodations to make sure that the questionnaire materials were coming across clearly to participants, to not everyone who was able to read. And we found very similar results in Vanuatu, though. So despite all these methodological adjustments we had to make, including the fact that people were buying for friends and family in their community or themselves, depending on condition, people were happier spending generously than they were buying these very exotic items for themselves.
You mentioned it already, but I'd like to just address it again. What is your own thought in relation to generosity and happiness? Do you think generosity leads to happiness, or do you think happier people are just more generous?
I think it's both. And I think there's some pretty strong evidence suggesting that the relationship runs both ways. We've seen a lot of the work that I do with my colleagues has been studying whether engaging in kind acts leads to higher levels of happiness. And I feel quite confident in saying that I feel quite certain about that. We've run dozens of studies with thousands of participants now demonstrating that in a variety of contexts, when people are randomly assigned to condition, to various conditions where we either tell them we strongly encourage them to give or we strongly encourage them to take for themselves, we see these emotional differences manifest afterward. And the fact that we're randomly assigning people to condition means that it's not just happier people who are choosing to do kind things, but that it's the act of doing it that makes it so. So we have some experimental evidence, some causal evidence showing that giving does in fact lead to happiness because we're randomly assigning people to condition. It's not just the happier people who go to the pro-social condition, the less happy people who go to the personal. But the evidence also shows from other people's labs over decades that happier people are more likely to give. This is in various forms of like short-term interventions. This is some old classic research by Alice Eisen and colleagues has found that, you know, gifting people small little goodie bags actually of cookies leads people to presumably feel happier and then be more generous to people in their nearby surroundings. But also some fascinating more recent research by Abigail Marsh and others at Georgetown University has found that, you know, in places where people are report higher levels of happiness, there are some outstanding demonstrations of what we might call exceptional acts of altruism, where people are more likely to give a kidney to a complete stranger. And so I think I think the best evidence to date kind of suggests that the relationship goes both ways. And I think that makes sense because I think the emotional rewards of giving are perhaps what encourage us to want to give again as well. So when we, you know, things that we feel good about, whether it be enjoying a slice of chocolate cake or doing a kind act for another person, when things make us feel good, these positive emotions encourage us to engage in that behavior again. And so I think it makes sense that giving makes us happy and happier people are more likely to want to give again.
If we go from acts of kindness and acts of generosity to a career which embodies kindness and giving and generosity, if we look at people who engage in acts of service all the time, like nurses and doctors and other emergency service workers, are these people, do we see a correlation between the occupation and that person's state of happiness over the course of their lifetime?
That's an interesting question. I don't know of any correlational evidence linking career choice with levels of well-being. In fact, at a certain point, and I don't know of the evidence, but I also have some skepticism about what that might look like, in part because there's also evidence showing that, you know, giving and kindness can lead to higher levels of well-being, and happier people might select into these jobs as well, like we were just talking about. That being said, there is also research showing that there's a compassion fatigue. So when people are giving so much of themselves, and sometimes actually not even seeing their efforts making much difference. And that doesn't necessarily always go hand in hand, but when people are giving so much of themselves, it can lead to a point of exhaustion. So for instance, some research, and this is not always the case with doctors and nurses, et cetera, but if you are a partner with someone who has dementia or a very severe debilitating condition, you know, you are spending a lot of your time taking care of another person. If the evidence I was talking about before were a straight linear trend, then we might expect these folks to be experiencing exceptionally high levels of happiness, but that's not the case. When one is constantly taking care of another person, and in some cases seeing no progress, like which might occur, for instance, with dementia, when someone is experiencing dementia, they might never recover. It can be pretty grueling as a caretaker. You might find a lot of meaning and value in what you're doing, but it can also be exhausting and it can be very difficult on one's well-being. And so all this to say that at some levels, increasing one's generosity can have this meaningful impact on well-being, but there's also a tipping point at which giving so much of oneself or all of one's finances can certainly become problematic or can become challenging for one's well-being. It's also worth noting that not every act of giving is going to translate into higher levels of happiness. Over the years, we've studied this association, and I think many occasions do embody a lot of kind of the critical ingredients that make giving especially rewarding. But there are occasions in which these critical pieces can be missing. And it's also helpful to know, because I think it would be incorrect to assume every act of generosity is going to lead to higher levels of happiness. If you'd like, I'm happy to discuss with those three kind of key. I can see the question on your face.
I'm thinking while you're talking there, because you mentioned it already, when it comes to pro-social behaviors, I'm just curious as to whether from an evolutionary standpoint, why it exists in the first place. Is it because it encourages bonding between people in groups and cohorts?
I think so. I think one of the reasons humans have evolved to feel good about giving is because it builds and fosters social relationships that are so critical for our survival.
Then let's go back to finances for a second, because I want to ask you this. Do people who earn more money, who would be financially better off and wealthy, for want of a better term, are they more generous than people who are less so?
My answer to that question has changed over the years. So about a decade or so ago, some research came out suggesting that people who are wealthier tend to be less generous per capita. So in raw dollars, wealthier people have more money to give, but give less proportionally of their income, was what original research by Paul Piff and his colleagues demonstrated really nicely several years ago. But since, I think our understanding of the matter has become a little bit more complicated. Specifically, originally we thought that people who enjoy higher levels of income were less generous per capita. But now it turns out that this might be critically moderated or depend on the level of inequality in one society. So there seems to be in highly unequal places, like the state of California, where the original research was conducted, higher income individuals tend to give less of their earnings to charity, or less of their pie to charity, than lower income individuals do. But in more equal states, for instance, like Alaska, I believe, the difference between generosity rates for high and low income individuals seems to almost disappear. And so it turns out that the answer to the question is not as straightforward as we originally thought. Originally, we thought higher levels of income were associated with lower levels of generosity per capita, like I said, but it turns out that it might depend on where you're living. Or how unequal your society, your more local society is in making these predictions.
Do you think an act of generosity is purely a selfless act? Do you think there's any component of selfishness to it? The reason I ask is because we all know people who are givers and people pleasers, and they do this constantly. I know some people do it so much that people actually question what their motivations are, and in that sometimes these people who are constantly giving are actually doing it for their own selfish reasons rather than just to make somebody else feel better. Do you ever look at that aspect of generosity?
I have a bit, and others have done a really nice job of it. It's a hard question, I think, to study, because people don't always report their motives with complete honesty. And so it's a little hard to get at. I, for what it's worth, I feel like I've sidestepped the question a little by simply just looking at what we define, and I think what is often understood to be a generous situation, and look at the emotional consequences. We've stayed out of the motives business, if you will, to not avoid that mess. But it's a murky area, because you know, we can design what we think, we've tried to design this goodie bag paradigm, and it's been designed to try to be what we think is a pretty pure test of generous motives. We try to remove the reciprocity concerns that, you know, you don't know who you're giving to, they don't know who gave the gift, and so there's no opportunity for reciprocity. We also try to take out the social desirability angle for making sure that nobody else in the room knows you've done a kind deed, and we still find that these emotional rewards are detectable. But, you know, some people might argue other things are going on in people's heads. All this to say, I'm not convinced that when people give, it's entirely selfish. I think that there are people who give driven primarily by other people, the positive impacts that they can have on other people. And if that is not their sole motive, that is their primary motive. Why is that? I think oftentimes, you know, in other studies, when we've asked people, what do you think will make you happier, spending on yourself versus spending on others? And most of the time, people seem to think that, you know, when they spend on themselves, they'll experience higher levels of happiness. what this leads me to think is that most of the time when people are doing kind acts, they're not doing it because they want to feel good. They're doing it because they have some true care and concern for other people. In fact, in some of our research, we have found that people experience larger emotional rewards when they engage in these acts of pro-social spending with more other-focused motives, right? When people donate to charity for a tax break or to look good to their boss, they don't feel as good about giving. And so I do think that the data, I don't think there's been one perfect study exploring this question, but I do think that the data seem to suggest that selfish motives are not what are entirely motivating people to engage in pro-social acts. And when people do pro-social acts with selfish motives, they enjoy it less. They feel less good about it. And so to me, this kind of gropes at the idea that I don't think it's a purely selfish exercise for people. In fact, I think most of the time, people will engage in some pretty self-sacrificing behaviors to help others. And they feel even better about it when they do than if they have some easy go at it. And so that signals to me these heightened emotional rewards that come from giving under strain and sacrifice are exactly the conditions that evolutionary theory would suggest we would feel good about giving, because those are the instances in which we really need these internal reflections to reward us, not these external pressures and praise.
Oh, I completely agree. I think most of the time, 99% of the time, people give selflessly, and I think they want to be altruistic and generous because they want to make somebody else just feel better about themselves and about their day. But I was just curious about those one or two instances where I'm sure we all know somebody who is constantly a giver, and maybe their motivations aren't quite as honest and as pure as people would think. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. I wasn't trying to put you on the spot or anything. So
No. I appreciate it. And this is not some of my own work, but it's work I really admire and adore. Is there's some really fascinating research showing that people are very sensitive to insincere acts of generosity. So as third-party observers, when we see someone do a kind deed for what might be selfish motivations or the opportunity to gain stature or status, it is very off-putting. So if we think someone has done a kind deed to gain a promotion at work, it is awful. It is, you know, the third-party perspective is we wish they hadn't done the good deed almost, because it is so spoiled. It is so soured by the self-promotion angle. And however, what I think is really fascinating is the only benefit we seem to not ding helpers for is the emotional rewards of giving. So if we hear that people who help feel good about what they've done, that seems to be a clear cue that they cared about what they were doing. And so while other forms of self-promotion or gain seem almost inexcusable and unpalatable, emotional rewards don't seem to signal the same concern or raise the same level of concern. And it's because most people interpret these emotional rewards as a clear signal of care.
I was just thinking as you were saying that people can see a gift with strings attached coming from a mile off.
Yes. Yeah.
Speaking of gifts, I'm really interested to hear your thoughts about giver-centric gifts and receiver-centric gifts. And I'm saying this, obviously, a couple of weeks ahead of Christmas, and I'm just interested to hear your thoughts on these two kinds of gifts.
Yeah. So I'll first define what they are, because they're a mouthful. So giver-centric gifts are gifts that are kind of focused on the needs, the interests, the personalities of the giver. And recipient-centric gifts are those gifts that seem to center around the gifts, the priorities, the interests of the recipient. And some past research I've done with Lauren Heumann has really tried to understand if there's any kind of difference in social connection or emotional rewards that kind of come from these two types of gifts. And what we found in a series of studies is that people's intuitions are that very much strongly slanted towards the fact that we should always be giving recipient-centric gifts. And so when people are going out to buy holiday gifts for their loved ones, they often think about, what does my little nephew like? What are his interests? What are his priorities? What are his preferences? What's he into these days? And they go out of their way to kind of scout this out, and they do their best to give a gift that they think captures their nephews or whomever they're buying for, their interests. But what Lauren and I found in a series of studies is that despite this strong preference, sometimes givers, recipient-centric gifts can miss the mark. sometimes we think we know the recipient perhaps better than we do. And when those occasions occur, we're actually better off giving gifts that reflect who we are, because these provide some meaningful opportunities to connect and share who we are with other people. And so if this holiday season, you're really struggling to figure out what it is your partner, your best friend, your colleague, et cetera, is into, what, you know, to give that perfect gift rather than try and miss, one very viable strategy that seems to promote closeness for both parties is gifts that reflect the giver. So sharing who you are, whether it be one of your hobbies, your interests, or something you've been gushing about lately, it's a kind of another opportunity to connect with the other person.
And then what other advice would you have when it comes to a gifting or giving of yourself to somebody else when it comes to generosity?
Well, I think we covered a lot of it here today. And I mean, this time of year, I don't think people need too much encouragement to go out and help others. But I think, you know, this isn't always top of mind for people. I think, well, maybe I should correct myself. I think most people are familiar with the old, you know, with you know, what their grandmother may have told them or someone in their life might have told them, it's better to give than receive. And I think my work often picks up on that. I think we're familiar with that in broad strokes. But when push comes to shove and people have, you know, an extra couple hundred dollars in their paycheck, or they find, you know, even a crumpled up $20 bill in their coat pocket, their intuition might not be to call up their best friend and go for coffee or to make a charitable donation. Instead, they might go spend this on a few extra lattes or, you know, an extra pair of jeans or whatever it might be. And so I think this time of year, maybe the plea is not so far-fetched. But the encouragement is really, you know, when people have the opportunity, my advice is to think about how they can help others, and this might bring them more enjoyment than they often realize. And I think the other major finding is to find ways that we can give that allow us to reflect who we are, to reflect our priorities, but also give in ways that we think that allow us to connect with other people, ways in which we can see how we've had a positive impact on others, and ways in which we feel like we've chosen to give. I know that sounds obvious, but I think in everyday life, sometimes we might feel pressured to give, whether it be tithing at church or pressured from friends and family. I think finding ways in which we feel like we've chosen to make a difference in a way that's meaningful to us can be really important for feeling good about giving.
Great insights there. Professor Acknon, if people want to find out more about your work, where can they go?
Lots of papers are published online, but also most of them, if not all of them, should be available through my website, which is the Helping and Happy Lab, Helping and Happiness Lab, excuse me, at Simon Fraser University.
And I'll pop a link to that website in the show notes for this episode. Professor Lara Acknon, thank you so much for all of your great insights today. Great to have you on board.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Happy Habit Podcast. If you're enjoying tuning in, please show your support. Like, subscribe, share, and leave the podcast a positive review. Plus, we are now on Instagram and on YouTube if you want to check out the videos of these episodes. Just search for the Happy Habit Podcast on both platforms. Until next time, stay happy.